Good morning. Today is Monday, November the 2nd. Joining us this morning is Eureka Police Chief, Mr. Steve Watson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brian, and our faithful listeners.
Well, even those that just kind of cherry-picked, stumbled upon us.
Well, the days they know I'm going to be here, you're probably scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Well, you know, stumble implies certain things. Winston, what do you got over there for us?
Trying to find something electoral related, but I can't find it. So, tying in with the TOP for today, what is the origin of the name Calamity Jane?
She would cause problems with people that she would shoot.
That sounds like a start.
Yeah.
The original Calamity Jane, Mrs. Martha Burke, was a famous Western character who said she got her name because she carried two guns, and any man who trifled with her invited calamity.
Okay. She was part of the Wild, was it Bill Hickok's Wild West show?
So, interesting note, I have a Marlin 22 lever action rifle. It's supposed to be the most continuously produced rifle in America.
Yeah.
And she supposedly did quite a bit of trick shooting with the early models of that.
There was in Cody, Wyoming, or Sheridan, Wyoming, there's a house, the hotel, and they had pictures of when the Wild West show came in, out in the front lawn, and they had all the horses and the trick shooting and all that kind of stuff. There wasn't a whole lot going on in Sheridan, Wyoming at those times.
she was a interesting yes. character,
but independent.
Reportedly truly a great marksman.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
a woman.
Interesting. So, what kind of practicing do your troops do?
Well, in addition to annual qualifications, which everyone's required to do, about quarterly.
Mean? You like look at a gun and you go, okay, it's a gun. This is the trigger. I know
everybody gets one bullet, and then they. You go to the range. Yeah, the range masters have a qualification course set up for both handgun and if you have a patrol rifle. Shotguns as well as your off-duty weapons, depending, and you have to essentially pass that qualification in order to be certified to carry on duty.
More than target practice?
It's not. Yeah, I mean, it's there's drills for combat and tactical reloads. Moving off the X, so you're not just standing static in one spot like traditional range training. Often there may be other drills. There's some marksmanship, involved. There may be a 25. Yard bullseye course, not part of the qualification course itself, but an additional course. You're shooting all the way from literally almost right in front of the target back to 25 yards, again, with different drills at different distances.
Does it include rolling in mud?
Not normally.
Not normally, yeah. Okay. Only after a good rain, huh?
Right.
Is that process, that testing, something that a regular person who has, a concealed weapons permit, would they be able to pass that, or is this stepped up because of what your profession is?
Well, we're not SEAL Team 6.
True.
You've got to be competent with your firearm.
When I think of SEAL, there's a different profile that kind of sets in than what I'm looking at right now, but that's okay.
A softer look, is that what you're...
Yeah. You're a softer, a cuddlier version of the SEAL. Right. Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how to take that other than truth hurts sometimes.
Yeah. You'll be spotted on the street now.
Yeah.
I blew your cover.
Yeah.
So what would the regular person take away from it that does have a license? Just how much more advanced the standards are for a police officer?
It would really depend on their level of skill and training. There are plenty of civilian shooters that have never been in law enforcement or the military that could go toe-to-toe and beat just about anybody or certainly be very competitive. So really, I would have to say it depends on their background. For some, it would be a relatively easy course. For others, they would not be able to pass it.
If somebody applies for a job, is that one of the critical elements? Is the certification with the gun, is that seen as just one of many things, or is it kind of seen as a secondary with an emphasis in other areas? And where does it fit into that continuum?
Well, it's a very perishable skill. And quite frankly, most cops will tell you we don't get to shoot enough. I mean, there's just budgetary constraints, time constraints, staffing. You want to be able to get as much repetition as possible, quality repetition, obviously. But, you know, frankly, there's some agencies that don't make it out officially more than maybe once or twice a year. We try to do at least quarterly. We'd like to be able to do a lot more. But, you have to – it's a high liability, skill, obviously, again, perishable. When you go to the police academy, you have to be able to meet standards there. And then when you come to your agency, often their qualification courses may differ from what was in the academy. And so then you've got to meet that new standard.
So if that's something that you try to strive for, I know this sounds kind of goofy, but do you expect all patrol officers, or I guess folks outside the office, the sworn, to be able to have the same competencies?
Well, there's a range, obviously, but you have to be able to pass the minimum, the minimum qualification scores consistently, or you won't be able to be in the field. And so all sworn have to do that. But, you know, most officers may never use their firearm, discharge their firearm in the line of duty across an entire career. And so there's other skills, softer skills, your ability to communicate and other intangibles that you use every day that are highly desirable traits in your police officers. But when that moment comes and you need to use your firearm in the defense of yourself or others, you better be darn sure that you have the skills to get that done in the training.
Sure, you don't want to threaten if you can't deliver. I mean, there's nothing more problematic than that. Are there other training elements, Stevie? I mean, you talked about words. You know, hopefully you don't have to draw the gun or use the gun, that you can talk through a situation. Do you have as much training with verbal skill sets as you do with some of the others?
Well, tactical communication or other similar names to describe more or less the same skill has been around for a very long time. So every officer learns, different ways to diffuse, and de-escalation is kind of the buzzword now. Situations these days between CIT and de-escalation, that's increasingly becoming part of our training.
So hit the ground scumbag is no longer in the vocabulary?
Well, there's a time and place for everything, but yes, there are better ways to communicate most of the time.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Steve Watson from the Eureka Police Department. Steve, the I don't know if it's called tactical training or what category or labeling it would use, but my sense is that a lot of what your troops do are therapy related. Now, it may be heart or tough love, or it might be supporting nature. Kumbaya kind of love, but that's an awful lot of what the interactions with the community are, immediate safety concerns are taken care of. Do you have folks that train your officers in that area, either communication skills or nonverbal communication, being able to recognize what's going on and be able to accelerate or compress that learning curve? So that maybe a two-year officer might actually have like 5 years worth of practical experience, and five could be at a 20 level, so that now you don't have some of those things that often occur to younger officers?
Well, it's certainly true that, as the years fall behind you as a law enforcement officer, many begin to learn the value more and more, especially as you get older, you see more, experience more, maybe you've been injured, or you've seen things go sideways, where you learn more and more to talk to people and begin to learn, I think, to a greater extent what really matters, what's really worth investing. Is this arrest serve the greater purpose in the moment, or is there a better path? In terms of training, there's an increased emphasis, and EPD's been doing it for a few years now, on skills like crisis intervention training, or CIT, and de-escalation training, which does speak greatly to, the ability to diffuse situations, to communicate effectively with people that may be experiencing a mental health crisis or other crises. It can be challenging still, nonetheless, when someone has methamphetamine-induced psychosis or some other drug-related causal factor for the way that they're acting out. Those people can be very difficult to communicate with. And many times, or oftentimes, they may have a co-occurring issue taking place with both a mental health episode or crisis and being under the influence of a controlled substance. And those are
booze
very
and
difficult.
Meth and a mental instability going in. And
sure. Could be polydrug use and a synergistic effect to the negative combined with underlying mental health issues. So which one is the primary issue that's taking place? And that can be very difficult even for a trained doctor to interpret. So we give our officers, the best training we're able to within our resources. And again, there's been a real emphasis, increasing emphasis on de-escalation and CIT training, which some studies coming out of some larger agencies are starting to show some dividends when trained and applied correctly and truly embraced as part of an organization's culture. Even officers can begin to see that the benefits of that, but it doesn't work every
officers,
time.
Huh?
Well, because you come in, here's the new thing, right? And sometimes, and we can be very skeptical and cynical because of what we see and we experience every day. And sometimes it takes a while to get everyone on board to really see, the benefits and how it can be applied practically in the real world. That's the challenge. You get the classroom, and then you got the real world application. And again, all the training in the world, sometimes there's some things beyond your control. But the more tools you can add to your bat belt, it's not just batons and pepper spray and a gun. Having other tools you can draw from and the ability to communicate effectively to someone, to recognize some signs and symptoms of a mental health issue and how best to communicate a person that's maybe dealing with one of these broad categories, a mood or a thought disorder or whatever that they're experiencing, I think is important.
When somebody is on meth or some of these other psychosis-inducing, what I have been led to believe is that it's heightened sensory. Okay, obviously that can't be right, because if they can't hear what you're saying or process it, that's not the case. What do you deal with different situations, different drugs differently? I mean, if somebody's drunk on booze, I would think that they would be acting differently than if they were on meth, and differently than maybe LSD. Are there nuances, or are you guys, because you're at the wide end of the funnel and the first interaction point, you're just dealing with the immediate and let somebody else sort things out?
Well, there's certainly that. I mean, that's been the traditional way, for the most part, to deal with it. Public safety is first, and the safety of the officer, obviously. But all human life has value, and so to the extent possible, the person that you're dealing with, you want them to go home safe at the end of the day too, or to the jail or to the hospital or the mental health unit, wherever they need to go. And so an officer is constantly evaluating all of these issues, and each situation is going to dictate a potentially different response based on what you're facing. A person with a gun in their hand, you're going to have to deal with and communicate with differently, frankly, than maybe someone that has a knife, and you can create some time, space, and distance, slow things down, bring in less lethal options like beanbag shotgun or pepperball launcher, tasers, things like that. Try to isolate them from the public, but give enough cushion that you're not forced into a situation where that person poses an immediate, imminent threat of death or bodily injury. Now the officers have them to make a split second life or death decision. Do I have to shoot this person? And so that's part of what de-escalation training is trying to use those time, talk, tactics, and other tools that you might have to diffuse the situation, be able to safely take that person into custody without using significant force.
KINS, News and Information Time is 8:30.
Hi, my name is Keith Lund. I am an electrician for Owsley Electric. You can go into a trade, be 18, become a trainee. They do require some education. You have 120 hours of classroom education, plus you have to work 2,000 hours a year. So after 4 years, then you can go out and work for another company, getting your own certificate, become your own boss. There's quite a few options you can do.
Own your future and learn more about the Trades Academy at hcoe.org.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Oh, good. The fog's lifting. It just random comment.
Is that symbolic for this year?
But perhaps this show.
As we near the end.
So you got to go out a little bit on Sunday. You get a little break from the bloodletting known as the 49ers ball game.
Yeah, don't utter that name in here the rest of this morning. I'm still in recovery. And
are you?
Morning. And the grief stages. I'm in anger still, I think. And
well, you know, you got a gimpy quarterback. It kind of makes things tough.
Yeah, hard when you can't plant that foot, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, but you got a chance to get out on your Sunday outside of that. What kind of reaction did you think? I mean, was it a generally pretty straightforward and pretty well behaved?
So you're referring to the pro-Trump rally or caravan? So they left Fortuna about 1:30 and went to McKinleyville, obviously through Eureka. They had a similar event, I think, about 3 weeks ago that estimated a couple hundred vehicles, several hundred people. The numbers we got this time were about 500 vehicles and probably 1,000 or so people. You know, it seemed as much as you can be for something like that, pretty well organized. They tried to keep the caravan together to the extent possible, kind of keep to the center lanes. A lot of flags, American flags, and obviously, you know, political signs. But overall, it went pretty well. You know, a couple minor incidences. We had one knucklehead in a car that wanted to try to stop and temporarily block some of the vehicles, but traffic stopped by an officer took care of that. And for the most part, people were respectful and passionate, but respectful and peaceful, including, I'll call them counter demonstrators, but I don't think it was really a demonstration. You know, is this people out?
Just other folks.
Yeah. I mean, showing up, you know, from the opposite side of the political spectrum, but totally respectful, peaceful for the most part. There were a few people that tried to agitate the caravan a little bit, but nothing that got out of hand. And,
I wonder about that approach. I mean, if there was a pro other side, why would I want to get in the middle of that? I mean, you know, either it's going to be uncomfortable or unsettling, or it could escalate pretty darn quick, and, you know, I don't have that skill set to be able to you're putting yourself, it's kind of like the guys that walk out in the crosswalks for me in the middle of traffic and expect traffic to stop, you know, adjust to me rather than me adjusting to society.
You know, the sense I got is this second event was advertised enough in advance that obviously it was pretty common knowledge it was going to take place. And the sense I got based on the numbers and the conduct of those that, you know, came to kind of present their counter point of view was, I think, a mature one in that, you know, we're not going to come out here in large numbers and try to create some giant conflict. And that was our concern, as you never know. If you get, you know, several hundred of a group that feels ideologically and politically very strongly one way, then you get the diametrically almost opposed group that comes and you send those two in an intersection, you have huge concerns about what could potentially happen.
Particularly both sides feel enabled.
Yeah, by the numbers and by their beliefs, because they believe them, you know, obviously with all their heart. And so seeing a better way, seeing Humboldt set an example with some restraint, maturity, which doesn't diminish the passion with which they believe what they believe, right?
I thought you were going to say, which often isn't associated with Humboldt County.
I think we're better than what we've seen in some other communities. And that's what I, as chief, expect of people. And I hope to see that through. It seems to be a much smaller group of agitators trying to create a bigger issue that doesn't represent most people or more moderate in their viewpoint and in their conduct. And you know, that's what I expect for this week, that we, I mean, we're all Americans. This is our community. This is our home. We have to live here together, work here together afterwards. Our children may be attending the same sporting events or run into each other in the supermarket or whatever. So can we have differences of opinions, but do it in a way that ultimately is respectful? I mean, I sure would hope so, because that's what, you know, it's all about. And our role as the police, you know, law enforcement, is not to take sides, to be nonpartisan and apolitical during these events, and just do our best to ensure a safe and orderly, you know, exercise of your First Amendment rights and your right to vote and express yourself without taking sides.
Just do the right thing. Ten Commandments. I mean, yeah. There's lots.
Pretty
of
simple in that regard.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah.
It seems to get lost in translation, however. Sometimes. So, what are you anticipating at the as the week goes on? I mean, it's a little goofy this time because we're going to have, I think, a prolonged tabulation cycle because of a lot of mails. I don't suspect that we're going to really know too much tomorrow night, or this time on Wednesday, or this time even on Friday, just because there's so much with the mail-in stuff. Even the locals, you know, you wouldn't think that the two wards in Eureka would take that long. What, 300-400 votes total, maybe 500 if it's a big turnout. Okay, I mean, we could sit here and we could count together, but the certification and all the other things associated with it are double checking. Do you think we're just going to be a lot of people on eggshells for a day or two?
Well, nationwide, there seems to be quite a bit of concern over this, that there may be unrest and violence. My sense, and obviously we don't know, so we're going to be fully prepared for whatever we have to face. And we'll need to hold people to obviously a certain standard while still giving them as much space as we can, you know, to exercise their rights. But, I think we're better than that here locally. And while we may get some demonstrations, I would expect that for the most part, the election will go smoothly and safely without any major disruptions. And that if people do choose to celebrate or to,
don't celebrate like LA fans.
Right.
Don't break things. Don't burn things. Don't tip things over.
Exactly. We faced a lot together, especially this year between COVID and the economy and wildfires and everything else. A very, you know, contentious election period that's been divisive, but, you know, humble, you know, we come together and so I expect, you know, we may have a few isolated incidences, but my hope is that overall things will go well. People will keep it peaceful.
We'll stay in Ahern's district.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, I know you're
all demonstrations, cool. By the way, they're pre-planned for Arcata, right. So, yeah, nothing's planned in Eureka at all. So.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Watson. Ready for 2020 to be over?
Yes. Yeah, I'm ready for 2021. But I got to tell you, I'm going to be quite bitter if 2021 starts to roll into some of the same as.
So it'll be like 2020B?
No, let's just go forward with 2021 is going to be a new year. And while we'll still have a few challenges to overcome, your legacy from 2020, COVID's not going to disappear, but it's going to trend line in a much more positive direction.
No, it will be interesting to see. Now, are you part of the Thanksgiving police?
I don't know what that means.
Are you going to be going around enforcing Governor Newsom's only three family members or three household gatherings?
No.
Okay.
That's wise advice from a safety standpoint, but I mean, impossible. We wouldn't even want to try to enforce that. You're at this point, you're appealing to people, live your life, be with family, be smart. Sensible and smart.
Yeah, which I know that's a stretch for some. The smart part, the sensible part, we'll just hope on that one. Oh, Anything, are you anticipating much before Thanksgiving? I know we've got Veterans Day next week that is going to be a little bit of an event. Obviously, we've got the election cycle. Are you anticipating a normal November or...
Well, election year, especially this election, I'm never going to tie unless it's at the end of it and we look.
But you're not hauling everybody in for overtime to be fully staffed just in case.
For the next week or two, we're being careful with approved leaves off and things like that, so we have the resources available just in case. We just want to make sure again that we can ensure a safe and secure democratic process, and the less you have to see us, the better. That's the way we like it and we want it. But we have a job to do, and we'll be prepared to roll with whatever we face. But our default posture is going to be de-escalation. It's going to be calm, professional restraint. Not cops all turtle geared up in the gear starting out like every demonstration's a riot. But we expect people not to do that here. And I think, again, Humboldt's better than that. And there's always a few, but the majority, they're not going to tolerate that. And
do you get advance notice? Do you kind of get a sense of what's going to start happening before it happens, or does it kind of take on its own essence and just happen?
Well, things can develop or evolve in the middle, but usually we have an idea that something's coming and we're able to prepare for it.
Good.
And that's about as deep into that as I'm going to go.
Well, you don't want to share everything in one show. I mean, geez, then what are we going to talk about next month?
Hopefully, have a great election process that we had.
Yeah. Something about turkey and mashed potatoes, huh?
Yeah.
All right, bud. Thanks for coming in.
You got it.
Have a safe and quiet week, okay?
You're not supposed to say that in law enforcement.
Oh, is that like saying fire at a tire dealership?
Yeah, you don't say, okay. You don't wish a quiet.
Well, I hope it's chaotic then. Knock your socks off. See everybody tomorrow.